was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year.
Paris, France, March 16.
Gaston Calmette, editor of the newspaper Figaro, sits in his private office talking to noted novelist Paul Bourget.
Well, Jean?
Madame Caillot is here to see you.
Henriette Caillot?
Gaston, do not see her.
Why should I not see her? She has probably merely come to beg me not to attack her husband, the revered minister of finance in my newspaper.
Do not forget, too. You have printed certain letters of hers.
Oh, they were written to Caillot.
Oui, but before she was Madame Caillot, while she was yet the wife of another man.
Oui, Paul, you are right. But she is a woman. I must see her. Show her in, Jean.
Oui, monsieur.
Well, then, Gaston, I shall see you soon.
Très bien, Paul. Au revoir.
Pardonnez-moi, madame.
Madame Caillot, you will be seated, s'il vous plaît.
Madame, what have you done? You killed Monsieur Calmette.
Do not touch me. I am a woman.
But traditional French gallantry did not prevent the arrest of Henriette Caillot. Immediately upon learning of the tragedy, Joseph Caillot tendered his resignation as member of the French cabinet, which was refused. Tension within the cabinet and sensational reaction against Caillot upon the part of the people resulted. However, only to be terminated on July 27, when a jury acquitted Madame Henriette Caillot on the charge of murder.
1914, that was the year.
Viva Fear! Viva
Fear! Hermosillo, Mexico, March 21, to the editor of the International News Service, New York. Within 3 days, Torreon will be in our power, and my next move will be according to circumstances. I salute you. General-in-Chief Francisco Villa.
Thus did rebel chieftain Villa notify the world that the long-expected attack on the federal stronghold Torreon had begun. April 2nd, in the home of Venustiano Carranza, Villa's superior and head of the constitutionalist forces, Carranza sits chatting with his wife, members of his family, friends. A telegraph operator sits at his key nearby.
No, my dear. It is now only a question of time. The Huerta government will soon fall.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, Silencio.
Well, maybe this is the news, eh?
Viva Villa!
Oh, pardon, senor.
Well, muchacho, is it Torreon?
Si, senor general. Torreon has fallen to Villa.
Torreon has fallen to Villa.
Bueno. Have the bugler sound the call of triumph and give me the telephone. I must tell the good news to Senora Villa.
And the march to Mexico City to overthrow the federal government of Victoriano Huerta was on. Huerta soon recognized the symptoms of defeat, acquiesced to mediation, and on June 2, after the fall of Tampico, announced his willingness to resign.
July 15.
After the constitutionalists have captured Zacatecas and Guadalajara, Huerta resigns. is succeeded by Francisco Carvajal. Carvajal appoints Carranza Secretary of Foreign Affairs, then himself resigns, leaving Carranza in the presidential chair.
August 21.
Carranza enters Mexico City, takes over the reins of government, declares in his inaugural address that he will launch a program of justice and reform.
1914, that was the year.
But while internal strife ran rampant through the Republic of Mexico, tension became strained between that government and the U.S. through an incident at Tampico. On April 10, the U.S. gunboat Dolphin puts into the harbor flying the Stars and Stripes, bearing a paymaster and a small detachment of U.S. Marines.
Okay, she's fast. Get us off.
One moment, please.
What's the matter, Doc?
I am General Ignacio Zaragoza, acting for the federal government. You are under arrest.
Under? Hey, what is this? We're United States Marines.
Nevertheless, you are under arrest.
Come with me.
Parading the leathernecks through the streets, the Mexican federals detained them for a short time, then released them. But the American flag had been insulted. Rear Admiral Mayo of the U.S. Navy demanded instant apology from President Huerta. The demand was ignored in an evasive reply, and a state of war soon existed. But with the fall of Huerta, the tension was relieved. And the following year, the U.S. officially recognized the government of President Carranza.
1914. That was the year.
But on April 5, there was issued by Secretary of the Navy, Josephus Daniels, an order prohibiting the use, for drinking purposes, of any alcoholic liquors on board any vessel or within any Navy yard or station of the U.S. Navy.
That was the year.
London, England, May 25, outside the House of Parliament.
God is saving Ireland! We are a nation once again!
Thus did loyal sons of Erin greet the news that the House of Commons had at last passed the Irish Home Rule Bill. Said Irish nationalist leader Johnny Redmond,
"The cause of Ireland's poverty, misery, depopulation, demoralization, and the cause of famine, bloodshed, and disloyalty among the Irish people throughout the world is dead. Its place will be taken by a union founded upon mutual respect and goodwill between the two islands. It'll be followed, I firmly believe, by a history of peace, prosperity, and loyalty."
1914. That was the year.
May 28. At about 1:45 a.m., junior radio operator Crawford Leslie sits at his post at Father Point on the shores of the St. Lawrence, gazing out upon the calm, moon-bathed waters of the Silent River. Suddenly...
CQ, something's wrong. MPL. Have struck something. May need assistance. Oh, my God. Whitey! Here we are. Whitey! Whiteside!
What's the matter there?
It's the Empress of Ireland. Listen.
Listening terribly. Stand by. Les, run over to McWilliams' house and tell him about this. I'll phone the skipper of the Lady Evelyn. And boy, if you ever run in your life, run now.
Rammed amidship by the Norwegian Kalios Storstad, the Empress of Ireland sank in less than 100 feet of water within 15 minutes, not more than 3 miles from shore, carrying 1,024 human souls to death.
1914. That was the year.
In the half-oriental atmosphere of the town of Sarajevo, Bosnia, a stolid, uniformed man rushes up the steps of the town hall, escorting his frightened wife toward an amazed Burgermeister.
Herr Burgermeister, this is scandalous.
My Excellency, what do you mean?
As we were driving through the suburbs of your city just now, a bomb was thrown at us.
A bomb?
We were saved only because I was able to ward it off with my arm. Two of my entourage were injured. It is scandalous, I say, perfectly scandalous. And now, you may go on.
Following the formality of speeches, this high-ranking member of the Habsburg family, reigning House of Austria, Archduke Francis Ferdinand and his wife, re-entered their car to visit his injured aide-de-camp, Colonel Morizzi. As the car made its way slowly toward the garrison, at the corner of Randolph Street, the Archduchess screamed,
"Ferdinand! That man killed the gun!"
Sophie! My God, Sophie! He's killed you! He's killed you!
And two well-aimed bullets from the gun in the hands of 19-year-old student Gavro Pritsnip touched off the combustible tinder of international relations.
August 2.
Germany invades Luxembourg and France. The next day invades Belgium.
August 6.
Austria declares war on Russia.
August 10.
France declares war on Austria.
August 12.
Great Britain declares war on Austria.
September 6 to 10.
The Battle of the Marne.
Soldiers on both sides dig in.
French warfare begins.
By the end of the year, the Allies had gained light advantages along the Western Front. And the stupendous Holocaust for which the nations of the world had been preparing for 50 years became a horrifying fact. But even in those troublous days, America took time out to sing. And one of the many musical productions on Broadway in 1914, written by prolific composer Victor Herbert, titled The Only Girl, gave us this perennial favorite.